Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. For decades, I've been preaching about the importance of a regimen of basic supplements that everyone should consider part of their daily health routine. So I came up with an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. The very same supplements I take myself and prescribe for my patients. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com and check out my Intelligent Medicine Starter Kit. It's a short list of the basic supplements that I recommend as a starting point for those looking to take control of their health. They're the essential elements of a basic program that everyone could benefit from. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to DearHoffmanStore.com. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and our guest, Dr. Jenna Henderson, who is the leading natural practitioner for kidney health. She's a naturopathic physician. She herself has been there, done that with kidney problems, has surmounted some of the challenges that she's had as someone who had kidney failure early in life, ultimately a dialysis followed by transplantation. And she knows the field and focuses on it in her practice, which I misspoke earlier. I said it was in Danbury, Connecticut, recently moved to New Paltz. But you needn't worry about the geographic location of Dr. Henderson because she's available for telephone, Skype appointments, and many of her patients deal with her that way. In fact, you have a big foreign clientele, right?
Yeah, we have patients all over the world.
Okay.
Yeah.
So... This is, I think, a good way to tune up your renal program. If you have, well, what are some of the conditions that come under the rubric of kidney health? Let's expand upon that.
Okay, so diabetes and hypertension, and there's all types of glomerular nephritis, you know, inflammatory conditions of the kidney, FSGS, which
and
is what I was
dealing with. A lot of kids suffer
with.
From those conditions, just small children sometimes.
Yeah, minimal change is the most common pediatric condition. IgA nephropathy, we also see quite a bit of. And then there's inflammation attached with lupus that affects the kidneys. And we also see particular diseases of the kidney, like polycystic kidney disease.
Mm-hmm. A hereditary condition where the kidneys are sort of like Swiss cheese.
Right.
Right, and that leads to kidney failure. What about kidney stones? Do you work at all with patients who suffer from frequent bouts of kidney stones?
I do. Yeah, they make up a small percentage of the practice. But yes, we definitely help patients with it. Sometimes the stones are too large and people need to go the route of lithotripsy to mm-hmm. break it up. But even doing something like curcumin can help make that lithotripsy less taxing to the kidney.
Mm-hmm. What about prevention of kidney stones? How do you go about that? If, say, someone has had a bout of kidney stones, they pass the stones, but man, they don't want to go through that ever again.
Right. Well, the biggest factor is dehydration. You know, so that's something, you know, most people have their idea of how much water they should be drinking sometimes can be a bit off. And then a lot depends on the type of stone. Is it a uric acid stone, oxalate, staghorn kidneys? So, we can get very targeted in what kind of prevention we can do to make sure that that doesn't happen again.
Let's assume it's the most common type of stone, which is the calcium oxalate type of stone. Do you recommend a certain diet for that or certain supplements?
Right. Well, we want to reduce the oxalates in the diet, and that can be tough because, you know, that does cover a lot of good, healthy foods. And then there's also
beets,
some products
and greens
that,
and things like that.
Yeah. So, but there's also products that can help bind oxalates.
Hmm.
And, so that can, if we know we're going to cheat on our diet, you know, we kind of have a plan B.
What are those? Are those available over the counter or are they prescription products?
Well, there's one called Nephure, and that it's a powder, and mm-hmm. it's particularly good at binding oxalates.
Hmm. Interesting. So it takes them out of the system before they're absorbed and deposited in the kidneys.
Right.
Okay. And then there a lot of patients who have kidney stones are people who've undergone gastric bypass or intestinal surgery. They're more prone to stones, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So, you know, getting them just eating a good, healthy diet, you know, oftentimes just, you know, things that most people would take for granted, you know, getting rid of the processed food is going to be very important.
Or alternatively, being overzealous about health. I read an account recently of someone who underwent gastric bypass who decided they're going to get it really on a health kick. So they did a lot of green juices, green juices, you know, to help facilitate the weight loss. But they developed very, very severe kidney stones from that. I guess that makes sense because the oxalate, because of the change in the structure of the gastrointestinal tract and fat malabsorption, it just doesn't have any place to go. It gets absorbed.
Right. Yeah, I try to caution patients against doing any type of extreme diet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, just everything's about balance.
Indeed. You mentioned, and this is on your website, that part of your program is not just about the kidneys, because we can always do something to restore kidney function, even artificially, with either dialysis or with transplantation. But it's a known fact that people who are on dialysis have a higher risk of cardiovascular disease and other problems. So speak to us about some of the problems that people on dialysis are susceptible to and what they should be looking out for in terms of prevention, because you may not ultimately die of kidney disease, but you could have accelerated death due to other types of problems.
Right. And by far, the number one cause of mortality for most kidney patients is that secondary cardiovascular disease. And it's interesting that so many things that are good for the kidneys also are very good for your heart, like coenzyme Q10. Also resveratrol helps with kidney function and also, you know, very well studied for cardiovascular disease.
Mm-hmm. I notice in some of my patients who have kidney failure or on dialysis, they have very high homocysteines. So what significance is that and what can be done about it?
Right. Yeah. So they need to, you know, make sure they're getting a good balance in their diet first. Oftentimes they lose their appetite. And so, you know, important to just make sure they're eating enough, but also getting, you know, good quality B vitamins, you know, very, very important. And, you know, some people just aren't good methylators.
The methylating formulas, formulas, methyl B. Mm-hmm. Dialysis is let's face it, it's an unpleasant experience. You have to go to a dialysis clinic. You have to spend hours there. There are options. You can have peritoneal dialysis, or you can have it through a shunt in your arm. What's your advice to patients who are nearing the threshold where they may require a dialysis, and how can they minimize the drudgery and unpleasantness of that experience?
Okay, well, oftentimes we can delay the process, sometimes by years. You know, I've had patients who worked with me, they started off with me and their creatinine was in the threes, and 8 years later, still creatinine in the threes. You know, we never got it back to normal, but we kept it in check enough to really, you know, keep the dialysis.
To forestall dialysis, yeah. In other words,
yeah,
they could lead normal lives and they're basically holding the line. For our listening audience, what happens is, you know, as your creatinine goes up, I mean, normal is, you know, what, 0.6 to 1.4 or 1.2. As it goes up into the twos and the threes, it's almost develops sort of a fatal momentum where the higher it is, the more it progresses, and you cross a threshold where it's almost impossible, a point of no return, where you have really a dim prospect of recovering kidney function. So that's quite a feat. You know, someone who has a creatinine of 3, keeping it at 3, because 3 pretty soon turns to 4, to 5, to 6, 7, 8, and then boom, you're, you know, getting a shunt.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So, they have to be very diligent. Oftentimes I work with people and their next blood test looks great. The one after that looks good. And then just human nature, they don't feel like they're in the danger zone anymore. They start to slack off on the supplements and the diet. And, you know, blood test number 3 or 4, is alarming, and we have to, you know, backtrack and try to get mm-hmm. things back on track. So, it's usually a variety of supplements, quite a few. I go after it pretty aggressively when the creatinine is high, and it takes a lot of diligence on the part of the patient to stay with it.
There haven't been many advances in dialysis over the decades, or have there been? I mean, I recall it during my medical school training as being a very arduous, uncomfortable process. Are they making it any easier? Are they getting more sophisticated?
I certainly have it better than my cousin did, who did dialysis in the 80s. I think, they make small changes every decade that can often translate into much better quality of life. So I actually do home hemodialysis mm-hmm. right now.
So that's an innovation that you don't have to go to a clinic. You can hook yourself up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they told me I would be inserting my own needles. I'm like, no, I don't think I'm going to do that. But they convinced me to give it a try, and I'm really glad I did. It's a lot of work, but it's very rewarding to, just be able to do it on your own time schedule and, be in control of the process. And the statistics are very good because you do more frequent sessions when mm-hmm. you do it at home.
Right.
And so you don't get these peaks of uremic toxins in your bloodstream and mm-hmm. then cleaned out. So doing it more frequently really does help with long-term survival.
Well, yeah. So let's talk about uremia, because uremia, has to do with your BUN score, right? Which is another thing that rises. Your creatinine rises, BUN. Right? What's bad about uremia for the body? Why do you have to keep cleansing out those waste products?
Well, there's actually more than 3,000 identified waste products that the kidneys handle.
Okay.
Pretty much any toxin that's water soluble is handled by the kidneys, and that's a lot of metabolic wastes. So they use creatinine generally as the indicator for how your kidneys are doing. Creatinine comes from our muscle tissue, and since our muscle mass doesn't vary much from one day to the next, it tends to be the most reliable indicator. It's also the reason why when we're estimating the glomerular filtration rate, they adjust male to female, because men having a more muscle mass tend to have a bit higher creatinine. BUN, blood, urea, nitrogen, that's the other big waste product that they measure. This comes from dietary protein. And so sometimes people are on a very high protein diet. They may have a mm-hmm. high BUN, but if their creatinine is normal, it's not that their kidneys are deficient. It's more about what they're doing with their diet.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's say you skip a dialysis session, maybe you're a disadvantaged person and you can't afford home dialysis, which may be, more for sophisticated patients like yourself, and you do fewer sessions. What's the downside? What could happen to you in terms of disease progression or aging?
Okay, well, that's one good thing about medicine here in this country. Medicare does a really good job at covering end-stage kidney disease. And so, there's lots of options. So not getting the care that you need, usually it's more about just patients being non-compliant than there not being available mm-hmm. options for them. But something that, most people don't think about is that, when your kidneys shut down, generally you stop making urine. And, so usually you go through a phase where the kidneys can't concentrate urine anymore and you're urinating profusely. And then gradually that shifts and you urinate less and less. And if you've been on dialysis, if you've been in renal failure for a length of time, usually you're anuric. You're not making urine mm-hmm. at all. Makes long road trips easier, but fluid can build up in your body, and that fluid overload is dangerous to your heart.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever your treatment protocol is, you really need to be diligent with it. And like anything in life, dialysis is really what you make of it. So, there's a lot of scary statistics out mm-hmm. there about it. On average, it extends, life less than 10 years. And, Partially because
yeah. I think the people who undergo dialysis have pre-existing conditions which led to the dialysis, which may also compromise their survival. If you have just one mm-hmm. clean hit that wipes out your kidneys, but you're otherwise healthy, maybe less of a dent in your life expectancy.
Right. And, you know, I do see a lot of people who begrudge going to dialysis and the fluid restrictions and the restrictive diet. And, unfortunately, there is a lot of noncompliance out there.
Mm-hmm. We also see some problems with the bones in patients with mm-hmm. kidney disease. So how do you address that to make sure, you extend your life with dialysis, but then you succumb to a fracture? How do you avert that?
Okay. Well, a big reason for the bones breaking down is high phosphorus. So when you eat phosphorus, normally the kidneys will eliminate it. Dialysis patients or people with advanced kidney disease have to take phosphorus binders. And it's important to keep your blood phosphorus in check. When that goes high, the body will take calcium out of the bones.
Mm-hmm.
And then that bound calcium phosphate often settles in soft tissues, like the lining of the blood vessels. So you mm-hmm. get this calcification, which is very bad.
For our non-construction workers, calcium phosphate is also known as concrete, right? Yeah. I mean, it's bad. It's mm-hmm. Something that is a hardened plaque that can mm-hmm. form. So is calcium supplementation contraindicated for patients with kidney disease? Do you have to be careful?
Oftentimes, they start patients on a calcium-based phosphorus binder, but once the blood calcium starts to creep up, they go to a non-calcium-based one.
Mm-hmm.
So, but something else that we can do is vitamin K.
Oh, okay.
Vitamin K helps bind the calcium to the collagen fibers in the bone and keeps mm-hmm. the calcium in the bones where it belongs. So it's good for preventing calcification of the blood vessels and holding on to bone density.
And what about the effects of environmental toxins on the kidneys? Do we have to be careful about that? And can exposure to environmental toxins compromise your kidney function? I understand it can, especially heavy metals.
Yes, heavy metals or people who work with solvents in their day-to-day work, people who deal with pesticides, oftentimes this can be a problem because, it has to pass through the kidneys. So, getting these toxins out of their system safely is often a challenge.
It is, because it's chelation therapy, as we ordinarily perform in people with normal kidney function. You have to be super careful with people who would eliminate these things with their impaired kidney function.
Right. Garlic and cilantro is good orally. Activated charcoal can also be good. But I also do a lot of skin detox for patients, either infrared sauna or doing detox baths. That can be really helpful, optimizing the skin as a detox organ.
Mm-hmm. And what about when it comes to food selection? Is it really of special importance for these individuals to follow a organic food diet and make sure they're not exposing themselves to any hazardous chemicals?
As much as possible, yeah. If they can get fresh organic food, that's always better. There was actually an interesting study that showed that kombucha helps the kidneys deal with environmental toxicity.
What do you do with the kids? I mean, do the kids with kidney disease, you work with them with a similar type of program?
Yes. We're trying to keep them off of prednisone as much as possible or some of the other different immunosuppressants. And it's really important because kidney disease can stunt their growth. So we really want to get them out of nephrotic syndrome as quickly as possible and, just stop that protein leaking. One of the things that people really don't consider oftentimes that relates to the kidney is sleep.
Okay.
Traditional Chinese medicine has long noted that insomnia and kidney trouble tend to be linked.
Hmm.
And oftentimes these parents, they'll have a, 5-7-year-old and they go to bed at midnight or after. And I'm like, no, they have to go to bed really early, have to be on an early schedule, have to get regular sleep, and deal with the insomnia issue.
In men who have kidney failure, you know, part of the problem with kidney failure is sometimes due to the low protein diet, sometimes due to just the illness itself, they tend to waste. They tend to lose muscle mass. Is it appropriate to use anabolic things like testosterone sometimes, as I've done with some patients with kidney failure?
Testosterone will raise blood pressure, so I'm cautious with that.
Mm-hmm.
I look at other options first. The amino acid L-histidine is good for helping the muscle wasting of chronic kidney disease.
But without putting an undue burden on the kidneys, because amino acids inherently, they have to be eliminated renally. So maybe you don't want to take massive amounts of protein powder or branched chain amino acids in great quantities. Maybe that's not such a good idea.
Right. And I always tell patients to spread their protein out over the course of a day.
Mm-hmm.
Because we eat protein, it goes to the stomach, and then a few hours later, it's in the bloodstream, and from there, it hits the kidneys. So we don't want a big load of protein hitting the kidneys all at once. So I encourage people to just eat, small amount of protein at every meal, and, maybe two snacks with a little bit of protein. So the more you spread that protein out, the better. Sometimes I get patients who say to me, I don't eat protein all week, but I let myself go on Sunday and eat a big steak. And I'm like, that's exactly what you don't want to do.
Yeah. Well, human nature being what it is, it's sometimes tough to avoid temptation. This has been great. Are there any points you want to cover that we haven't covered yet? We did talk about some of the nutrients that are helpful, carnitine, coenzyme Q10, vitamin K, fish oil, vitamin D. Within reason, because you actually like to keep the vitamin D from you don't want it sky high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Chinese herb Salvia mitoriza, also called Dan Shen.
That's a sage family, right? Salvia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And red Chinese sage, and it's a traditional herb for the heart, but it's also very good for the kidneys.
Interesting. But I think we must issue a bit of a caveat, is you don't want to be taking traditional Chinese herbs willy-nilly, because some of them are spiked and adulterated and may have adverse effects on the kidneys. And not to be avoided entirely, but maybe given under the guidance of an experienced practitioner like yourself who knows them.
Right. Yeah. And that's true for vitamins in general. There's a lot of additives that I warn patients about. Silicon dioxide can be an irritant to the kidneys. That's a common additive, and it's sand. So, something
it's in a lot of vitamins. It's a lot of capsulating materials sometimes.
Right. Yeah. And phosphorus additives, dicalcium phosphate.
Yes.
Yeah, propylene glycol, which is the antifreeze you would put in your car.
Yeah.
That's common in a lot of low-grade supplements. So, so it's always good to have a professional giving you some advice on what's a good quality brand.
Okay, well, you fulfill that role, and it's a very niched role. I think you're helping a lot of people because this is a much ignored area within the field of natural medicine. We're not here to supplant high-tech medicine in terms of dialysis, transplantation, the use of medications. I'm sure you agree that we want to minimize those if possible and forestall the need for these things. But should the need arise, medication plays a role, things to keep blood pressure in check as well, because that's important for the kidneys. But what do you eat? What supplements do you take? What's safe? What's not safe? That's your realm. And where can people find more information about your practice?
Okay. My website is
www.holistic-kidney.com. www.holistic-kidney.com, appropriately enough. And your practice is physically located in New Paltz, but should that daunt people who are on the West Coast or even overseas who are listening to this, can arrange a consultation with you, right?
Yeah, we have lots of patients from Australia, New Zealand, even Indonesia. So, yeah, we have patients from all over.
Well, the need is great across the world. So thanks for fulfilling that role. And, you are a shining role model of someone who's effectively coped with a challenging health condition and actually turned it into an avocation, which is your medical specialty. So congratulations to you, and stay well, stay active, and continue to help a lot of people. I want to thank you, Dr. Jenna Henderson. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.